I'm very glad to have you all back with us again today for Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut, part of the new five-day-a-week Political Rewind. For this first week, I can't say it enough. You're used to having us do the show today, Wednesday, and then come back on Friday. Not any longer. We'll be back with you live tomorrow, starting that five-day-a-week schedule. And I hope you'll all come along with us for that ride. We're very excited that with all there is to talk about, with this explosive political year that's upon us, that we have an extra day to share with you the analysis of the great panelists who do this show with regularity. Some of them are here today. Greg Bluestein, political reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. If you see a front page of the AJC that doesn't have Greg Bluestein's a byline on it, you're reading the wrong newspaper. Hi, Greg.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here. A little later, you spent some time watching Kelly Loeffler during the holidays go make the rounds in the state. And later in the show, I want to ask you how you felt about how she handled herself out there. We'll get to that at some point. Next to you, and if you're watching on Facebook Live at GPB News, you can see her there, Dr. Audrey Haynes, who is a political science professor at the University of Georgia and who runs the Applied Political Science program there, which helps train people for careers in politics. I want you to know, Audrey, that after getting a new T-shirt from the Applied Political Science program, it's been my go-to exercise shirt for the last couple of weeks. Thank you very much.
Well, and can I tell you that the highlight of the season this year for our visiting practitioners was to have Bill come at the very end and do the closing talk.
Yeah.
And at one point, like Superman, he raised the shirt, and there was the Applied Politics T-shirt. Yeah. And we were all very excited by that.
He didn't rip it.
Yeah.
Well, it was a nice shirt he had over that one,
yeah.
So we're not going to rip.
Yes, State Representative Mary Margaret Oliver, who represents Decatur, Democrat from Decatur. If I was a highlight of the season, then Audrey had a pretty bad semester.
No, that is so not true.
I'm sure those students loved it.
They did.
Thank you for being in here today. You're getting set, obviously, to start the session on Monday. But you made a long drive to get with us today.
I started at Tybee Light this morning, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. And Heath Garrett's back with us. We haven't seen you in a few weeks. Heath, of course, worked with Johnny Isaacson for a very long time. At one point, as chief of staff for Senator Isaacson. And of course, you're one of the best-known behind-the-scenes political consultants in Republican politics. How does it feel, Heath, to now have Johnny in basically retirement from public life or from elected office?
Well, being completely honest, it's surreal.
Yeah.
It's surreal. My entire adult life, I met Johnny, started working for him when I was at the University of Georgia doing applied politics, and have been with him ever since. And we were meeting this morning trying to plot forward. He still wants to be relevant. He still wants to be a positive influence on political civility and do what he can do, given what he's trying to deal with Parkinson's.
Yeah. Is he feeling the surreal nature of this?
I think it really, over the last couple of weeks, we've had a lot of conversations about this is real.
Yeah.
And he was, as a real estate salesman, a chief executive of that office, and as a senator, he's been working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There were no Sunday afternoons off in either politics or in business. And so this is a completely new world for him.
Yeah. By the way, thanks to you, Heath, we were able to do a long sit-down conversation with him that is on our website. If you want to go to GPB News' website and look for Political Rewind, you can find that interview. It was really a fun conversation because Johnny and I go back like 35 years and had a lot to talk about. So people might want to check that out if they haven't had a chance.
It was one of the most substantive interviews of him at the end of his career.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. All right, let's get to work. Greg Bluestein, I'm fascinated by this, and I can't wait to bring the rest of the panel in on it. We're going to start with a congressional race because we have not been focusing on congressional races because of all the other news, all the Senate race news, the impeachment news, all of that. So here's the starting point today. In 2018, Democratic candidate Carolyn Bordeaux came closer than any other Democrat running against an incumbent to almost beating Rob Woodall, the Republican who serves in the Senate, in the House from the 7th District. She came within 500 votes.
It was the closest U.S. House race in the nation.
In the country. So she almost, she very quickly announced for re-election. And I thought she was probably the insider for the job. But suddenly you have a couple of really key former Democratic leaders changing their allegiance. Max Cleland first, and now more recently, and perhaps even more relevant, Roy Barnes, who backed her 2 years ago, now switching to Sarah Karinchak. What's going on?
And Senator Karinchak is a state senator from Gwinnett who flipped the district back in 18 as well. So she's a freshman state senator who was somewhat of a surprise when she entered that race. A military veteran who used to serve as then Governor Barnes as deputy executive counsel. But what you're seeing is a sign that at least among some establishment Democrats who were initially supportive of Carolyn Bordeaux, that you know they think that Senator Karinchak can be a more effective opponent. Because they think a lot of Democrats see this as a almost not a lock, but as a giant pickup opportunity.
Well, and of course, I'm sorry, it is an open seat now. You're not running against Rob Woodall. There are going to be some formidable Republicans, one of whom will emerge as the Republican candidate. So perhaps that weighs into this equation.
And a lot of their main argument against Carolyn Bordeaux is that they feel like that she should have won it back in 18. And although it was a tough race and she got very close, but a lot of the supporters of Karinchak, and not just her but also Nabila Islam and state representative Brenda Lopez, mm-hmm. Say that those candidates would be better alternatives to Carolyn Bordeaux.
So we do have, this is by coincidence, Mary Margaret, but you have been a backer of Carolyn Bordeaux for some time. You're very enthusiastic about her.
I'm very enthusiastic.
So how do you feel about what's happened here?
I think I feel badly about it. Zara is a star, is an asset for the state Senate. She made a good start in the state Senate. There were a lot of resources, win list, we show Democratic Party, that went towards her election against a very strong opponent to win that Senate seat. You don't give up that kind of Senate seat easily. When you say there are a lot of people moving to her support, it's Roy and Max.
Roy and
that
Max
means
Cleveland.
Roy.
You're, okay.
And I hate to be such a cynic about this, but there's a lot of consultant activity around Zara.
What does that mean?
It means that they want to see another race where they can make some money on it. I'm being kind of negative about that.
Yeah, that's
but
fine.
I'm a big fan of Carolyn Bordeaux. She's worked like crazy for 2 years. She's never stopped campaigning. I think that she's built a support on the ground, and I think she has a very strong opportunity to flip that seat. Zara has a bright future. I'm for her. I work for her. I liked her. I gave her money in her state Senate race. But this is distressing to me as a long-term advocate and funder and campaigner that we're seeing this kind of flip from races.
You know, Heath, one of the things that Mary Margaret said that I think is worth discussing is Karinchak was one of, what, six Democrats who picked up seats in Gwinnett County and really helped move the House. I mean, the legislature closer to having some more power for the Democrats. But and so there was a lot of surprise when, as Mary Margaret says, she won this race out of nowhere.
Against a good opponent.
Against a really good opponent. And now she's, you know, abandoning that seat or potentially abandoning it to try to win this congressional seat.
I'm no expert on it, but I call this the AOC effect, right? They see these very young national figures in Congress with using social media, getting all kinds of celebrity status. And the temptation – now what we could all sit around the table and talk about is actually you can probably assemble more power as a state senator in Georgia over a couple of years than you can as number 435 in the U.S. House.
Ask Brandon Beach about his decision.
Ask Brandon and others about this. However, that's hard for a young person to do. But yes, look, we as Republicans are not going to knock the fact that there's a nice, brutal Democratic primary going on in the 7th Congressional District at this time. I do think that's advantageous to us in potentially doing that. But I do think it's the AOC effect. They're seeing these young attractive women reach national prominence real quick and saying, okay, I want to go do that as well. And I'm not sure that's a great discipline for younger candidates when they win a tough seat like that. And that gives us a chance in Gwinnett to compete again in a state Senate seat. So I guess we're pleased with it.
Audrey?
And I would just add, too, at this point in time, we want to look at other types of support rather than just endorsements. But even if you just compare endorsements, Boudreaux has a significant number of, you know, high-level individuals in politics who are endorsing her. She also has much more money at this point in time. She has more PAC money, more small donors. And I will tell you, I had a personal experience with Karen Schack myself. She called me on the phone. She was actually calling my husband, asking for money. She's very articulate, very good. And one of the things that I think we'll see in the campaign is when other people perhaps were, there were people who were stepping up in 2018, but Boudreaux was one of them who took that risk without a lot of, you know, political experience, got out there. And then Karen Schack did that too in the state legislature. But people will be talking about, why are you leaving, especially in this state when we need you so much in that state seat, which you could win again.
Yeah, I'm glad that several of you have already made clear something that's important. It is true that we just have these couple of Democrats who have switched allegiance. But,
with a personal
but
connection.
In Roy Barnes' case, particularly, it just was surprising to me. Bordeaux by no means is on the ropes in this race. She's always been, as Audrey points, a prolific fundraiser. She really knows how to raise money and has a pretty good network, I think.
Yeah, and she came out with her fourth quarter statement. She was the first of all the candidates, and Republicans and Democrats, to come up with that statement. And she raised about $300,000, which is a sign that she's very confident that she'll probably lead the pack if she came out, you know, guns blazing on that one.
Well, among my group of women funders or in touch with women funders, they're all kind of doubled down for Carolyn Bordeaux right now. We feel committed to her. And she is a great resume to me. Mm-hmm. Zara does too, but Carolyn's been working significantly hard on that congressional seat for two years now. That means something to people on the ground and to others of us.
And when you say she never stopped campaigning, you're right.
Because she never stopped.
She formally announced the day that Congressman Woodall said he was retiring, but she was already out there making it very clear to everyone who would listen that she was going to have a comeback bid.
You know, I think that's interesting because I saw this brief window that we might be able to get her in here as a panelist for at least a few shows because she is an interesting person. And, of course, that closed very quickly. So, Heath?
Yeah, and look, Rob Woodall's a good friend. And as incumbent, I think he did not see the wave coming. And a lot of what happened in his campaign, so we're not going to see the 7th Congressional District as Republicans. The fact that she immediately announced and was a formidable opponent, I think, was a good wake-up call for us as Republicans out there. So I don't want to get lost in this. We have a couple of great candidates. There may be eight or nine running.
Talk to us about how you think the Republican side of that race is shaping up.
But, you know, I think, look, State Senator Renee Unnerman, you know, one of the most powerful women in the Republican caucus in the state of Georgia with a strong voice, I do believe is the political front runner at this time because of her base, her name recognition, the kind of ferocity with which she campaigns. But we also have a self-funding businesswoman who's entered the race, and we have two or three other people who don't fit the traditional kind of white male typing of Republicans that I'm excited about up there as well. So I think that there's going to be a healthy Republican primary, and there's a good chance that we as Republicans may nominate a woman to help, I think, stem this kind of argument that we're not open and growing the party.
Yep.
Well, and I would argue and make a point, too, with Unterman is that she has about the equivalent of cash on hand that Carolyn Boudreaux has right now. Mm-hmm. She's a wealthy woman, too, who works for a very large, substantial company. But, you know, if you're looking at that Republican primary, Home Depot has a great brand in many ways, and Lynn has the ability to
Lynn Homrick.
That's right.
Yes. And you know, I think there'll be some competition because Unterman has some negativity that goes along with her. And that's going to come out and maybe perhaps divide some of those Republican voters.
That's why the session is going to be so much fun for us as observers because you've got both Zara Karinchak and Renee Unterman are both serving as state senators. Yeah. Who, both of them have made it very clear they're not stepping down, so they're going to continue to run for higher office while kind of using the platform in the state Senate to promote their candidacy.
Well, that's a really interesting observation. Mary Margaret.
Session's going to be fun for lots of reasons.
Yeah.
Well, of course. But just in terms of that alone, how do you manage that if you're one of them? What's the advice you give to your Democratic colleague there, Karinchak, and how do they maneuver with each other?
Well, on our side is Brenda Lopez too, who's also
right,
a rising
that's right.
star.
That's exactly
we shouldn't,
right.
We shouldn't ignore the fact that she has an interesting opportunity. We're all playing over our, you know, handicapping a race that we didn't see coming at
right.
all. You're right. Nobody saw what happened in the northern suburbs, and so everybody's trying to think that's going to happen again in a stronger way, which I think it may. It'll be fun to watch Senator Unterman and Zara. They are both strong, vocal, not passive, not shrinking violet kind of people, and it'll be fun to watch. The Senate always has, and I can say this because I was one of them, a third of the people in the Senate are always running for another office. Mm-hmm. So Zara and Unterman are going to be doing messaging on a daily basis as candidates. And the real work of the Senate, is going to fall to some others. And that's what I'm curious about as we go towards a session where the budget is going to have a new priority and a new set of attentions on it.
As long as we're talking Congress, congressional races, what a quick nod, Greg, to the 6th District race. We haven't talked about that in a very, very long time. The Republicans are virtually clearing the field for Karen Handel to be their candidate. Lucy McBath had some visibility as a member of the Judiciary Committee during the early stages of impeachment. Where does that race? Race shaping up?
It looks like a rematch. I don't see any other alternative than a rematch between Karen Handel and Representative McBath. So it's going to be sort of a replay of 2018 in a way, because every other Republican primary opponent has either left the race, like Brandon Beach, the state senator who decided a few months ago not to run, or is opting for another race. And that's Marjorie Taylor Greene said she's running for the 14th district, which is literally two districts over. It's in Northwest
Graves.
Georgia, even though she lives in North Fulton.
The irony being,
Tom Gravesy.
Of course, that John Ossoff had his head handed to him by Republicans for running for that seat from outside of the district.
He
and now Marjorie Taylor Greene,
yeah.
She's going to go even further to commute to that district. Audrey, I thought that one of the interesting things that he's talked about here is this notion that running, and Brandon Beach did learn this lesson, being a powerful state legislator in many ways is much more important than being a backbencher freshman congressman. Now, if the Democrats retain control of the House, then fine, the Democrat who wins the 7th, if a Democrat wins the 7th, if Lucy McBath's reelected, they'll have some leverage. But man, if they're in the minority, oh my gosh, that's just really a feeling of futility and invisibility.
Yes, and I would agree, because one of the things I've learned through applied politics and all of the visiting legislators that come in state and otherwise, man, they do a lot of work.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, and Mary Margaret Oliver can attest to this, maybe 90% of what they do, they do together. They solve problems. They do have some issues that create some schisms. But they leave after their session, and they've accomplished some things. And even
in the legislature, as opposed to Congress,
But in Congress, even if the House Democrats maintain their majority and the Senate stays in the hands of Republicans, you can pass 400 bills, and nothing gets passed.
I'm very impressed with Congresswoman McBath's beginning. Not many in the freshman class of Democrats have their picture made by Annie Leibovitz multiple times and in Vogue and in New York Times, and all of that matters. Her personal story matters. Her start on the Judiciary Committee and other prime opportunities she's been given, the passage of a bill out of the House on gun legislation, brings attention to her and to that race that gives her enormous strength, in my opinion. What is Karen Handel going to say about guns? What is she going to say about choice that is going to be in any way attractive to the 6th Congressional District?
Well, and I think we've got a good opportunity in the 6th because Lucy McBath ran as kind of a center left, you know, very moderate, no voting record outsider against Karen Handel in a year where all Republicans in the state of Georgia underperformed. And Stacey Abrams did a great job of overperforming in the suburbs. So there's no excuse for us as Republicans not to see that coming this time. Mm-hmm. I agree that we're going to have maximum Democratic turnout. But the key is for Karen Handel to do a better job of getting her message out, defining Lucy McBath for the vote she has taken, including a controversial vote in support of impeachment for a number of people in that district. That's still a 52% Republican district if everybody votes, right? But if we can't motivate Republican voters and center-right voters out, then it's going to go back to a, you know, 300 to 1,000 vote margins. I give Karen a good chance.
All right, let's before we take a break, let's take on one other issue. Greg Bluestein, you've already mentioned Carolyn Bordeaux reported her fourth quarter numbers. That means the last 3 months of 2019, and she's doing pretty well. We're pretty eagerly awaiting the Democratic Senate candidate figures, especially from Teresa Tomlinson, I think it's fair to say. But in the meanwhile, the Ossoff people got off the mark on this very quickly because they were glad to say they'd raised $1 million in the last 3 months of 2019.
Yeah, and they're trying to show that they have a strong financial bearing here going in. He's trying to present himself as the front runner.
Yeah.
And showing that by raising seven-figure hauls the last two cycles, he was about $800,000 in the first 3 weeks, the last reporting period, and now $1 million or so this latest cycle, that he has the financial wherewithal to run a campaign. He's very particularly pointed out the fact that he had 8,000 donors who did not back his 2017 House race. That was the record-shattering financial, you know, crazy $60 million race, who did not back that race but are backing him now. So he's showing that he can attract new donors. We don't know how the other candidates are doing quite yet.
When do you imagine we're going to start seeing
those?
We don't know.
Is it the 15th?
They're not due until the 15th, but often we see them before.
Yeah. Especially if you've got good numbers.
How much of John's money was a move from the last race to this race?
So his first quarter reporting way back in October, he reported about $1.1 or $1.2 million. Of that, $800,000 was raised. The other three or so was transferred.
But this is new money.
This is new money, though.
Yeah.
The second round is new money.
Audrey, I suppose it we're going to be looking particularly at Teresa Tomlinson because she has – I don't know whether it's been fair of us or unfair. I won't try to make that judgment. But we certainly have talked about the fact that since she was the first one to jump into the Democratic side of this race, her fundraising numbers have not lived up to the expectations I think many people have of what a leading candidate should be able to do, especially when you've got David Perdue out there. You know, his numbers are more than what all the Democrats so far have had combined. So are we going to be paying particular attention to what Tomlinson's able to do?
Well, of course. I mean, you do. It takes money to run a campaign. It takes money to pay for, you know, professionals that can help you do the things you need to do and get your message out, run your headquarters. And it's interesting. I mean, but it's not unexpected in some ways, right? Because if you think about Ossoff, he has all that free media that he got from running, and what a contest it was, right? Everybody was paying attention. Teresa Tomlinson is coming out of a city as a mayor where those who know her know of her reputation and are impressed with her ability. But the truth of the matter is a lot of people don't know who she is, right?
Which is one of the reasons, Heath, I think it's fair to say that the Tomlinson campaign has been cranking out one endorsement after another for months and months now. It is also true, I think, and you'll correct me if you think I'm wrong, that it shows us that coming out of an area outside of Metro, being from South Georgia, essentially, in Columbus, is a harder row to hoe.
Look, there's no question. As a son of South Georgia, but as a student of politics, it makes it more difficult. And the fact that John Ossoff had $60 million spent on television with his brand and his face, that doesn't go away overnight. It goes down. I do think we're seeing a modern campaign, John Ossoff, national money, television, radio, all new media, versus an old-fashioned campaign where Teresa's going around the state collecting endorsements, which will matter outside of Metro Atlanta more so than inside. And we're going to see if those two can compete with each other in this primary.
Mary Margaret?
I'm excited for Teresa's chances. I really am. And the
you've endorsed her?
I have.
That's what I thought.
I'm one of those long list of people
who are
working for her, and particularly in the last 48 hours of our national attention on Iran. You're talking about a mayor who's worked with five generals in the fifth largest military base on the planet and who has a security clearance. I mean, you're talking about somebody who has a significant role in relation to that military history and asset of Georgia, and somebody who is known throughout the 500 mayors of Georgia.
You know, Audrey, if I ever have to run for the position of host of Political Rewind, I want Mary Margaret Oliver out there working on my behalf.
and one thing I'm really going to be interested in watching is all the attention, and we mentioned earlier, has been on Kelly Loeffler and been on that open seat. And so, and I've been talking to some of the candidates for the last few days saying, basically, sorry, I haven't been covering as much as the Purdue race as the Kelly Loeffler situation, because it's been, you know, this brand new senator in a wide open seat. So how they're going to try to break through the din and raise cash and get attention and focus on their campaign.
Greg said, you're going to get the last word before the break, Audrey. Greg said such an important thing. It's not just that first Senate race, what we're calling race number one. It is the congressional races. It is even legislative races.
The presidential.
Everything's being buried by impeachment, now Iran. It's just harder to get your message across right now than probably any time I can think of.
Yes, and that's what I was going to say, the timing,
yeah.
You know, with the Mayor Tomlinson. You know, at another point in time, I think her, the opportunity to run would be better. But right now, with so much going on, the air is just sucked out.
Yeah.
And two, she is coming from South Georgia. And right now, if you think about those resources— she has to appeal to people and gain support who are so partisan right now. There's so much partisan polarization, it's a lot harder for her to reach, I think, the Democrat she needs to, and independents.
All right, we got to get to a break because we did start the show intentionally talking about races we haven't covered. That does give us an opportunity to say a few words now about Kelly Loeffler, Greg Bluestein. And I do want to talk about the time you've been spending with her as she's tried to get out around the state and talk to small groups of people about who she is and why they should feel comfortable with her. We'll do that after we stop for these messages.
My name is Diamandis Papadopoulos. I am the medical director at Metroderm. Metroderm is a dermatology/dermatologic surgical practice in Atlanta with 18 providers. I wanted to participate in underwriting for public radio. The integrity of what I was listening to made me feel like I wanted to be part of that message, and that represented us, and it was something I felt very positive about doing.
To find out more about becoming a corporate sponsor, email sponsorship@gpb.org.
Iran's foreign minister insists his country does not want nuclear weapons.
If we wanted to build a nuclear bomb, we would have done it a long time ago.
I'm Ari Shapiro. As Iran breaks limits set in the 2015 nuclear deal, we look at what's known about the country's nuclear capabilities this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered this afternoon from 4 to 6 right here on GPB. You can listen live online at gpbnews.org.
Mary Margaret Oliver, Heath Garrett, Greg Bluestein, and Professor Audrey Haynes. I introduced you last today at this segment, Audrey, because I want to say how glad I am that your folks out in Athens who listen on WUGA can now hear you when you're on the show any of the 5 days a week, now that they're carrying us 5 days a week out there. So
yes, we're very glad to.
Yeah. Greg Bluestein, Kelly Loeffler has been the talk of politics in Georgia for a long time. Now, we've spent a good amount of time talking about her this week. But let's focus first on what you observed. as you went out there to see her in action, trying to make an impact in the local communities of the state that she's visited so far?
Genuine curiosity, because the interesting thing about her rollout is because she didn't run a campaign. She's not known in political circles, and that's why you saw so many elected officials say, frankly, they couldn't endorse her because they hadn't met her yet. And we're talking about from state lawmakers up to the lieutenant governor, like just up to the very top of the political pyramid here. So there was just big crowds of people. I was at an event in Carrollton at the county commission chairwoman's house, where there was just a big crowd of people just waiting in line, not even to hear her speak about policies, but just to kind of get a feel for who she is. So I would say curiosity has been dominating those events that she's going to. She was in Savannah. She was in South Georgia. She was in West Georgia out in Carrollton. She had a few events in North Georgia where she's just meeting with the grassroots folks. And these are important meetings because, you know, you might not recognize a lot of their names, but those are the folks that man the phone banks and knock on doors and attend the morning breakfasts and kind of drive these campaigns.
So those of us who have watched from a distance and read your reporting, and we've said it on the show, have come to the conclusion that the jury, even in Republican circles, is still very much out on her. Is that truly your observation?
Yeah, I surveyed, 100 plus county Republican officials, and the quotes got redundant. I couldn't use, I could only use like 5 or 10 of them. But yeah, pretty much the vast majority of them said, look, I trust Governor Kemp, but I don't know who she is, and I need to see her in action. And this first week, we started to get a glimpse of how she'll handle that job in the U.S. Senate.
Heath?
I've known Kelly for a long time. She's going to be a great senator. She's going to do a great job as a candidate, but it is new. And you are going from corporate America and being a businesswoman to a completely different stage. It's two completely different types of questions. Obviously, and she has, I thought you used an important word, she has a curious mind. She's going to be a good listener. I think that what I judge by is what's not really necessarily happening on the Democratic side, right? The Democrats said they were waiting to see who it was. And we've been out here for 6 weeks now knowing who it is. We still have no opponent yet. There's still no African-American in either the primary or the special election yet on the Democratic side. I think I think that Governor Kemp kind of stumped the Democratic Party a little bit here. And I think she's performing just like we would want her to, getting out, meeting everybody. Voters want to touch and feel their elected officials still to this day in the modern era. And I think they're going to like her. She grew up on a farm in Illinois. She knows a lot about economics, a lot about agricultural economics. I think she's going to play well, and I like what I'm hearing from the field about her at this point.
Mary Margaret, I saw you shaking your head, of course, and let me. You can say whatever you want, but let me throw something your way and see if you want to react to it. She does have a great biography. There's no question about that. Authenticity is going to be crucial, I think, to how she connects with people, because we don't know anything about what her politics have been in the past. She may be all of the things she's now saying she is. She may be pro-wall. She may be anti-abortion. She may be pro-Trump. She may be all of those things. But we don't really know that. And so look at it and say, is this the authentic Loeffler or not?
We don't know yet. In a modern campaign, you're only talking to your friends. That's what's so disappointing and difficult from my perspective. She is an unknown with a very good resume, very attractive, successful person. But she's being escorted around to her friends, to the base, to the Republican loyalists.
Well, I'm not sure they're her friends yet, are they?
Excuse me. She's been escorted around to the Republican loyalists, all of whom know Doug Collins as a very authentic person. Authenticity is very much a key. The other thing that the voters, and I don't mean the choir members who are going to vote Republican. I mean real Georgians. You have to show that you're making an effort and that you've got some guts about it. And being escorted and put in protected rooms and not being asked anything that's tough is not an introduction that tells the voter that she'll meet her resume.
Well, obviously, though, that's going to change as she walks the halls of the U.S. Capitol, which she's going to have to do, and reporters start bearing down upon her. It'll be fascinating to hear.
David
Perdue see how that goes.
Has never had a town hall.
Well, I get that. But...
And Kelly Loeffler, I'm guessing, because I'm not a political consultant that knows everything and is successful at all this kind of stuff. I just see the modern campaign as one where people don't answer
right.
questions.
So let me okay. Audrey, I have one of these I've proven on this show for like 6 years now is how often I am completely wrong about things, and I'm about to say one of them that I think some of you want to dispute. I know Greg Bluestein's been reporting frequently on Doug Collins. Yeah, maybe he's still interested. He's looking at it. He's making comments that seem to open the door. Most recently on Fox News, he suggested I would be kind of flabbergasted, frankly, if Doug Collins decides that he is going to drive a stake into the heart of the Georgia Republican Party, many of whom will support him, but then he's got a Brian Kemp to deal with. He's got Kemp Abbott. I'm just finding that would be, to me, an incredibly bold move by Doug Collins.
Yes, I almost feel like Greg should be the one who addresses that. But it goes to risk. And what we were talking about with Kelly Loeffler also goes to risk. There's no reason for them to risk putting her out there right now. She needs that time to, you know, get her sea legs or her Senate legs, so to speak. It takes a lot of effort with Doug Collins, too. What a lot of people forget is there are a lot of personal relationships that go on, and we are people. And, you know, how he feels about being in the state. I mean, and then success. Like, you know, I mean, all those things come into the calculus.
Heath, Greg, yep.
I do think
is Collins really going to do this?
I think that the president of the United States has created such an opening for one person. No other Republican, nobody
for
else
Collins.
Could is for Collins.
Oh, all right.
Right?
That's true.
By giving the president and Don Jr. has been out there on social media, and Sean Hannity's referring to him as Senator Collins. At a certain point in time, if the president of the United States is in pushing you into a race,
yes.
it becomes very
all right.
difficult.
And that's why.
Really excellent
the,
point.
The congressman told me he'll wait. Again, he told me, you know, just the other day, he'll wait until the impeachment process plays out, however it plays out. But you're right. So far, the governor and Kelly Loeffler and her supporters have managed to kind of grind this to a stalemate over Trump.
Yeah.
Trump hasn't tweeted anything negative about her or positive about Doug Collins running for Senate, at least. He's tweeted positive things about Doug Collins, but not about running for Senate. And that's about as good as they can get short of an outright endorsement. But
what does that do to the state party?
Well, I mean, if you look at it,
it
could divide them. But at the same time, if you're thinking you're going into a January 21 runoff anyway, which is what a lot of people just assume, because there'll be multiple candidates from both parties on the same special election ballot, even if Doug Collins doesn't get in, there might be other Republicans running who might even if they take 2 or 3%, it could be enough to force you to run off. Then if you're Doug Collins and you could go into this thinking you only need about a quarter of the vote. To get to a runoff, you know, that it might not be.
Audrey mentioned risk. That's an interesting word to me. Kelly Loeffler is taking no risk. It's an unbelievable gift, opportunity for her to participate at the highest level of politics in the United States of America with no risk.
It's a Governor
no
Kemp risk.
Mm-hmm. No financial risk for her, no personal time. I mean, it's a no-risk situation. Compare that to what average Georgians do every single day. They're risking just getting to work. And it's a fascinating thing. Will she come across with this good resume from the Midwest, which is legitimately a farming background? Will she come across as authentic and identifying with the risk and the challenges that everyday Georgians do? Doug Collins, by contrast, I like him. You know,
isn't that right?
I like him.
Collins,
sure
as partisan
as awful
he's
as he's
shown,
been on TV,
he's
awful.
Shown. Well, he showed his partisanship for sure. You talk to the legislators like yourself, Democrats like everybody loved working with
military
Collins.
Background, family.
Minister.
I mean,
he's an intelligent guy too. If you've had a conversation
he's
with
authentic,
him,
authentic. Let's go back to that word, authentic. Person and Georgian. And Kelly will have a very interesting gift of an opportunity here to make a case.
I think what's interesting, Bill, real quick on that is that But every day that goes by and she does five more meetings around the state every day or gets to know somebody or gets to take votes that align her with the conservative Republican base and with Donald Trump. And then if she gets to the point where she gets to vote to exonerate him, right, and then some of his argument goes away. So I think if we're going to hear from Doug Collins, I think we may hear before we get all the way into a trial and a jury vote in some way, shape, or form, because the further it does allow her to ingratiate herself and take away some of his argument.
And one other factor
Real quick, and then I'll get a break.
She's pledged to send $20 million. So, yeah. And she's already spending that money. Yeah. So the further we get away from that or from a Democrat getting in the race, right, the more time she's got to spend to boost her name recognition, her policies, her platforms, reach out to voters, all that.
All I can say is I just hope when Doug decides he's ready to announce one way or the other, I hope he slows down just enough so that we know whether he's saying he is in or he's not in.
It's hard to keep up with him typing, isn't it?
Let's do this. Let's get our final break of the show out of the way. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit about Georgians in presidential politics.
You've been thinking about helping this station with a donation. Why not donate that extra car, truck, or RV you no longer need? It's easy. Pickup is free. It could be worth hundreds of dollars in support, and you could even get a tax deduction. Get the process started today. Give us a call to learn more about the advantages of donating a vehicle. And thanks very much for your support.
Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or go to gpb.org/cars.
On the next Fresh Air, how the Trump and Kushner families immigrated to the U.S. and built their fortunes. We'll talk with Andrea Bernstein, author of the new book, American Oligarchs, The Kushners, The Trumps, and the Marriage of Money and Power. She also co-hosts the podcast Trump Inc., as in Trump Incorporated. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 right here on GPB. You can listen live online at gpbnews.org.
I said at the very top of this show that we'd maybe dip into what's happened in Iran and impeachment a little bit. If it's okay with everybody on this panel, we've got a special panel tomorrow in which we're really going to get into a lot of the questions that were raised by the attack that the president authorized that has created so many questions about the stability, instability of the Middle East right now. Scott Hocum's going to be here. He's a Democratic state rep, but beyond that, he has tremendous credentials in as a lawyer working on intelligence issues in the military. He's coming in. Jackie Cushman will be here, who I think has quite a different perspective on all of this. And Dov Wilker of the American Jewish Committee is coming in as well, talk about the Israeli side of how this is all developing, and talk about this spate of anti-Semitic hate crimes that have many people in Jewish communities around the world so concerned right now. So if you all don't mind, let's not go down the rabbit hole of impeachment or Iran today. And with that in mind, Greg Bluestein, let's just talk for a couple minutes about presidential politics. Few things happening. You all reported in the Jolt, I believe it was, where I first saw it, that Keisha Bottoms, mayor of Atlanta, is continuing her vociferous support for Joe Biden. She's headed to Iowa, which will be voting in caucuses 3 weeks from Monday night. She'll be there over the weekend.
Yeah, I think there's no high-profile Democrat who's played a more forceful role in backing a presidential candidate from Georgia, in Georgia at least, than she has. And she went to Houston. She's gone to Iowa.
South Carolina.
She went to South Carolina. So she's gone to Iowa before this. And she's only one of many, many local elected officials who already taking these trips, going to New Hampshire, going to Iowa, trying to help their candidate of choice. It's really also a sign that you know it's kind of put up or shut up time for a lot of Democrats who have been on the sidelines. You're starting to see more endorsements in the presidential race because we're not that far away from March 24th now.
Yeah, it's getting very close. What's in it for Mayor Bottoms to be this aggressive in supporting Joe Biden, Mary Margaret?
Enhance her national profile, which will help Atlanta. That's good for Atlanta. It's not. It's good for her, but
makes
it's good
sense
for Atlanta because she wasn't as known. And I think she's doing a very positive, strong thing for Georgia, for herself. Georgia is at play. And I think that she's thinking about Atlanta and about Georgia. It's also true that you know that the much of the Georgia leadership is pretty well on board with Biden keeping a front runner status up till March 24 through South Carolina. And black voters are going to be loyal to him, is the theory. And if he becomes the nominee, he will be looking for a VP that we believe Georgia can be at play again.
Heath, it's interesting what Mary Margaret has just said. We talked about this a bit on yesterday's show. We always like to focus on Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, and then Super Tuesday, which is on March 3rd or 4th, whatever that I right. forget the two what that Tuesday is. In any case, increasingly, what is the date?
Third. March 3rd.
Increasingly, though, you're hearing consultants who say, this Democratic contest could go well beyond Super Tuesday. In fact, it may have turned out to be a brilliant stroke to put Georgia later in March if you're a Democrat.
I think that it puts Georgia in a good position. It's similar to why Brian Kemp wanted to break away from Super Tuesday a few years back and give us a little separation. I'm not sure it played out exactly right, but I think for the Democrats it will this year. I think that mayors – by and large, tend to be more pragmatic than they do partisan. I think she's very pragmatic. I think Joe Biden is the pragmatic candidate in the Democratic field. I think she is of more value to Joe Biden than she would be to some of the other candidates, and she has raised her national profile. And look, as a Republican, the person I don't think we want to run against right nationally is Joe Biden. So I think she's put herself in a good position politically. I want to give her credit for that. And I do think that what's happening, we're going to talk about it tomorrow, but is actually making Joe Biden's stock go up in the Democratic primary as we speak, because even Democratic voters are going to go back to wanting somebody with some foreign policy chops in a time like this.
Audrey?
So a little piece of political science, really two things. One, if your state's competitive and there's a lot of activity, that's really going to help your economy. Right? So there'll be a lot of money spent here.
Boy, the TV stations are licking their chops.
Yes, of course. Spending here.
Yes. Second point is, if you are a state that helps a presidential candidate get over that number they need to win those delegates, there is a very good payback for that. So,
Greg, I loved hearing Heath acknowledge that Biden continues to be the guy who Republicans are most worried about as the nominee. Certainly President Trump, in his campaign against Joe and Hunter Biden, has made that clear over and over again. And it does seem to remain true. And no matter what kind of flubs he makes on the campaign trail, no matter the fact that he is outraged by, other candidates, especially Bernie Sanders, but he stays on top of the polling in many states and nationally.
They feel like he can play well in those battleground states in the Midwest, but also be competitive here in Georgia. Yeah. And the AJC poll that was out a few weeks ago showed that of all the potential head-to-head Democrats against President Trump, he had the widest lead over President Trump.
All right. Real quick, another point we should make. Speaking of presidential candidates, we learned today that Michael Bloomberg's coming to town on Friday for a Stacey Abrams conference, a Fair Fight Action, I assume, a conference. That's a big deal. He is amazing. He has already spent more than $100 million since getting into this race, and the needle is ticking up for him in polling.
Yeah, he's starting to get some traction in the polls. This is his second visit to Georgia since he announced his campaign a few months ago. He also visited Augusta, and where he picked up the endorsement from the mayor there, Hardy Davis. But yeah, he is looking to kind of make his stand in that Super Tuesday round of states and then compete in Georgia just a few weeks after.
Mary Margaret, one of the things I think is interesting about Bloomberg's TV campaign is there's a way in which there's a certain selflessness to it. I mean, yes, he promotes himself, but mostly what he does is undermines President Trump's message, which will work in favor of whatever Democrat should eventually win the nomination. Is he good or bad for the Democratic
Party? He's good for the Democratic Party.
Okay.
There's a Mike Bloomberg yard sign around the corner from me. So, yeah.
It's the and only he one put it there. He flew in on his private jet and put it there himself. That's how much money he has.
The only other presidential yard sign is Bernie Sanders, who was never taken down. I mean, it was never taken down. So I'm amused by that. Bloomberg brings attention to the race. He brings the finance people to the race and opening their eyes, thinking more about this, President Trump's allegation that the economy is what's going to get him elected, that's his theory. That look at you, all you need to do is, Fran Miller said this morning, all you need to do is look at your retirement account and then you vote for Trump. Well, Bloomberg brings a lot of good discussion to that issue. And I'm grateful he's in the race. I'm grateful that he's spending whatever portion of his hundreds of million dollars here in Georgia back to the economy.
Yeah, and I was going to mention, too, of all the people out there, Bloomberg probably has some of the best data, and he is someone who would not enter a race if he didn't think he had a chance. They have really plotted this out strategically. It will be amazing for political scientists because it hasn't been done this way in the last 30 years. But there was a time when people did not run in every primary, and they were far more strategic about where they spent the money. And it is a different time now. It is a different time. So much of the train is different, and his commercials are amazing.
They're very interesting commercials.
Go ahead. You just say what you want to.
I think it's important. Bloomberg coming here is a couple of different interesting points. First, he has the money to do something unique that no other candidate would have the opportunity to do, which is pick and choose and drive name recognition without having been in the race for years and out doing the kind of grassroots thing. I think number two, it's interesting that he's coming to Atlanta for Fair Fight, which could create an implied endorsement of Stacey Abrams, which I'm sure she would probably fight against herself. But that is her organization. And the reason he's coming is because he was the single largest donor.
$5 million.
To Fair Fight. And I think we need to tie all that money together. This is a great example of how it's not just what he's spending on television. It's all the nonprofit contributions he's been giving to these organizations across the country for years. Mm-hmm.
But that's funny you mentioned that, because when I was reporting the story out, I was elbowed, sort of nudged to as a reminder that he is being invited to this because he is that large contributor, not because Stacey Abrams is endorsing Michael Bloomberg. She's in an interesting spot here too, because she's being talked about as a potential running mate to any of these leading contenders,
but particularly Biden.
Yeah, and she doesn't want to be seen as throwing her lot behind Bloomberg.
One other comment of it: it ties into the data and the Stacey Abrams. He has said in his mayor years that he has used his foundation, his personal money, to test out social service programs. Yep. He has a lot of information based on what he's used his personal wealth on homelessness, on health care issues. Makes him also an interesting candidate.
You know what, Greg, here's something I find fascinating, and you'll relate to this. The difference in the way that the local media sees a candidate, an elected official, and the way the national media reports on that person is often quite different. When you talk to local New York reporters about Michael Bloomberg and when he first got into this race, there was a lot of scorn thrown at him. Oh my God, Michael Bloomberg, here's how bad he was as a candidate, this and that. And yet he's got the attention of the national press beyond those New York locals who saw him in action in that arena.
And yet, even though he struggled in the mayoral race, his first mayoral race, he still won.
Yeah, so, that's exactly right.
He expands the discussion. He expands the issues.
I'm going to give you the last word.
I can't let it go without saying that it looks like the Democratic Party has become the party of big money with Michael Bloomberg coming to town.
You know what? If Donald Trump heard you suggest that a Democrat, Bloomberg in this race, has more money than he does, you'd be run out of the Republican Party.
There's a tweet coming, Heath. Watch out.
Time. That's it. Completely out of time. Heath Garrett, Mary Margaret Oliver, Audrey Haynes, Greg Bluestein, thanks for being with us today. Thanks to all of you out there. We're back tomorrow at 2 o'clock, Thursday, with another Political Rewind. See you all then.